Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook at www.audiblepodcast.com/MRmedia, that's Mr. Media, where you'll find more than 60,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. That's audiblepodcast.com/MRmedia. So, where was I before that commercial? All right. Mr. Media is recorded live from the world's new media capital and hometown of more than a few infamous American Idol wannabes, St. Petersburg, Florida. Weeks ago, I didn't know Adam Falcon from Adam West, but now I'm here to tell you that if you like jazz with a little bit of R&B, maybe a touch of rap, and maybe a twinge of Prince, you're going to love this guy. The singer, songwriter, guitarist just released a new album, Bohemian 959. Now, I don't know what the title refers to. You know, actually, that would make a good first question, so let's think about that. But even if you haven't heard of Falcon before, I can tell you he's been a familiar face around some pretty familiar names. George Benson recorded a couple of his songs, for example. He's also worked with two more of my favorites, the late, great Rick James, you know, I'm Rick James, bitch! Sorry, couldn't help myself. And Robert Palmer. And Adam was discovered at age 15 when he snuck into the Fillmore East to watch Sly and the Family Stone. Now, I once waited outside a cheap two-story motel in Pinellas Park, Florida, until 3 a.m. to interview Sly, but that's another story. All right, enough of me yammering. Let's get to Adam, and even better, spin a couple of his joyous tunes. Adam Falcon, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you so much, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. My pleasure. You know, it's fun when you are introduced to some music that you did not know before and that you enjoy even better. So, delighted to have you here. So I mentioned this in the introduction, Bohemian 959. I'm sure that means something to you that the rest of us will never guess at, right?
So many people have asked about that. I can understand why. 959 represents the numbers of the house that I grew up in the Bronx.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah. And as a kid growing up there, we used to have a lot of jam sessions and a lot of guys come over and we would play and rehearse. And while we were doing that, it sort of got to be like a hangout place for a lot of guys in the neighborhood, especially anybody that was a musician to come over and we'd That was years and years and years ago, like I said, in high school.
Uh-huh.
So while we were recording this new record, it was almost the same type of vibe. We were in a loft space, and some musician friends of mine, we were just sitting around one night talking after recording some of the songs, and the producer who was with me back in the days of the early childhood days, he said, this environment is a lot like when we were growing up as kids and the basement was like. And so that brought on the title Bohemian 959 because, again, the bohemian lifestyle for the independent musician is one where you just set up shop and just go. It's like a lifestyle that I had lived for years. And so Bohemian 959, the title was born from that whole experience.
All right. That's a fair explanation. It actually makes for a good story. That's good. And now, this is not your first album, but I am wondering, I haven't heard the others, to be honest, but what sets it apart? What's different this time? Is it more the same? Is it a little bit different?
No, this one is totally different. This actually is the third one that I put out on the fourth one, actually, in total. I did one which was a collaboration CD with another singer-songwriter by the name of KJ Dennis. She and I had recorded a CD together. But this latest one, Bohemian 959, is more of a funkier, soulful type of record as opposed to the first one that I put out. The first one that I put out was called I Too Am Colored, Black and White, which I'm sure is another title that people would want to know about. But I Too Am Colored and Black and White was the first one that I did, like I said. And that was more of an eclectic, jazzy type of folk, if you will, type of record. And then I did a three-song EP or a four-song EP a while ago, which was sort of like the precursor to 959.
Okay.
And that one pretty much was sort of like a funky thing too. That actually was some songs that we were working on, some demos and some things, and we just decided to put that out because we sort of liked that was like a different version of some of the songs that we had out already.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So 959 is more of a funky, like I said, a funky, harder type of sound.
Well, that's I'm hoping we can get in a couple of the songs today on the show to introduce more people. I wanted to start with Better Days. Do you want to set that up a little bit before I play it, or should we spin it first?
Well, I guess if you want, you could take a listen to it first, and I guess we could talk about it afterwards.
All right. Why don't we do that? Folks, this is Better Days from Adam Falcon, and this is on the Bohemian 959 album. Give a listen to it.
Hey.
Big funky beats coming from Adam Falcon's Better Days from the Bohemian 959 album. You were going to tell us a little something about that song.
Yeah, that song came to me around the time of 9/11. I had overheard a conversation from these two firemen, and I just found it quite interesting because they were discussing how it was their first time in New York. And I just found that remarkable how they were here to as they put it, help their fellow brothers to work down at the Trade Center. And they kept going back and forth saying, you know, how much they had wanted to come to New York. And even though it was such an unpleasant experience, you know, they kept referring to their brothers, their fellow brothers. They had to come and help their brothers to make a better tomorrow. And that just started the whole process of me thinking about how you know, it's just like one day at a time and one step at a time, and then just make it work as best you can for a better tomorrow.
It's a great song. It's very very uplifting. It's got a great beat, obviously. It's got that pounding, you know. It sounds really good. When you write a song like that, are you listening for a melody first? Are you hearing a lyric? Well, you know, what tends to grab you, or is there no particular rhyme or reason?
That's pretty much it. There's no particular rhyme or reason. It can come from any place. Sometimes I could just walk down the street and start whistling a melody or hearing a melody in my head, or I could hear like a conversation over here, someone speaking, and then I'd write it down, and the song can come from the words first, or in some cases I could maybe start hearing a drum pattern in my head, or just strum. My main instrument is guitar, so I can just sit around and play the guitar, and a melody will come from there, or just like a chord pattern or something, and then one thing leads to the next, and next thing you know, it's the song.
what caught my ear, I think, was I'm a big fan of what used to be FM radio in the early mid 70s, where it was very freeform, and you'd hear this type of music, and it would be, as people who are just hearing your music for the first time in the show, you'll hear it's very different from song to song, and that's the way that things were at that time. You never knew on the radio, album cuts and that kind of thing. You never knew what you're going to hear from one song to the next, and I like that. I mean, it's just
right. Thank you. You know, it's that's an interesting point, because I was reading an article. I don't know how long ago this was now, but I had read this article about this producer, and he was saying one of the things that he liked about the Beatles' White Album, which I just loved growing up, was that if you listen to that record, that's such an eclectic mix of songs. And in today's market, if you were to go with the White Album to an A&R guy at one of the labels and say, okay, I got a Rocky Raccoon, and then I have a Revolution Number 9, they'd show you the door.
Right.
Because that record is all over the place, so to speak. But it's, each song speaks for itself, you know. And in my opinion, that's what art should be. I mean, you should be able to express yourself any way that you want. And so that's what I've tried to do with this new record.
Well, Adam, we've got someone calling in. I'm hoping it's for you. Hi, do you have a comment or question for Adam Falcon?
Hello?
Colin. Hi, yeah, go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I was wondering what your favorite concert experience was, either attending a concert or playing one.
Wow, that's a great question. You know, Bob started out by saying how I snuck in to see Sly and the Family Stone. That's got to be one of the greatest concerts that I had seen at the Fillmore East. And then I think another one that I can recall is I remember seeing Led Zeppelin and B.B. King together. Talk about an eclectic mix.
Wow.
I mean, I guess they're both coming from the blues, but I remember in Central Park seeing both of those acts together, you know, and I remember on my way there just wondering which one was going to be the opening act, you know, because at that time Led Zeppelin, I think, had just put their second album out, you know, and you know, B.B. King came on first and just tore the stage up, and then watching Jimmy Page come out and do his thing, and John Bonham, and just the energy So that kind of thing like stuck with me. So I guess those two concerts were started were like the first two that I could actually think of some of the best concerts.
Definitely. Well, keep up the good work, Av. It's Brian, by
Thanks.
The way.
Appreciate it.
All right, man.
Thanks, Brian. So when you saw Sly, he actually showed up for the concert, or did you wait a couple hours?
You know, I've seen Sly so many times, and I've only seen him show up only one time that he came to the show, and it was like really really late. But every time I've gone to see him, he always showed up and put on like an amazing show, and this was I guess at this time he was just about to peak. This was a little bit before Woodstock. And he just, like I said, the venue was the Fillmore East. And he just lit the place on fire. I mean, he played till like 5 in the morning, ran off the stage and out into to the street of 2nd Avenue and then back into it. It was insane. It was insane.
Well,
yeah.
Somebody else who really dug Sly Stone was Prince, and tell me if I'm wrong, but in your song "The Waves," I definitely hear some Prince.
It's interesting you say that. It's really interesting because I didn't really hear it until a drummer friend of mine brought that to my attention and said the same thing. And he you know, it's so funny because some of the guys that I work with, you know, they can't really remember the titles of songs, you know. And so I said, we're going to do The Waves. And he said, is that the Prince song? it's interesting to hear you say that, but I'll take that.
It's a compliment. Let's squeeze that in. Folks, this is The Wave by Adam Falcon. And you think about whether you hear any Prince in this song. Here we go.
Baby, child is a man, the voyage you command, it's time for you to set sail. A journey you're to find, there to come a time when you're to be on your own. Let the waves rush in, carry you away. The waves rush in, carry you away. A mother to her only son said, one day you'll become all the things that love needs you to be. And on her words he realized that time had come to say goodbye, 'cause love had come to set the free. Child, castle of sand, wooden ships to far off land, filled with all your golden dreams. Oh, let the waves rush in, carry you away. Let the waves rush in, carry you away. Let the waves rush in,
Okay, it's just me, but I mean, anyone who doesn't hear a little bit of Prince in that song obviously has never heard Prince, you know. So, I don't know what to say there. I mentioned in the introduction your George Benson connection. He recorded some of your songs. Have you actually worked with him directly?
Just in the studio while we were working on the first song that I had recorded with him.
Mm-hmm.
I did the rhythm arrangement on the song, and he had asked me to play rhythm guitar on the actual track. And that was really the only time that I worked with him. I remember a long time ago, I was in the house band at the Apollo Theater in New York, and he came in. I think he was like a guest host, and we played behind him for a couple of songs. But I've never really worked for him per se outside of that. No, but I had known him for quite a while.
He was actually the second act I ever saw in concert back in
wow.
Oh gosh, 76, 77. I guess maybe Breezin' was probably the big thing at the time. Saw him at the outdoors of the Garden State Arts Center in Homedale.
Oh,
and,
okay.
That was something. Although I have to say, in fairness to my memory of this, at the time I couldn't understand why people paid so much money to watch a guy come out and stand in the middle of the stage and just play the guitar. And he didn't sing, he didn't dance, and I was, you know, 16, 17, and I thought, okay, I was expecting a little bit more here somehow. I don't know.
Right, I know.
But, you know, I've matured a little bit. I understand now.
Right. So many people would like to hear him just get back to just playing, doing like a lot of – when I first met him, he was doing – strictly instrumentals, and he really wasn't like a household name at the time. This was before Breezin'.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like on fire. I mean, this guy would just play on some unbelievable stuff. And a lot of guitarists who know George and have hung out with him, they pretty much all try to encourage the same thing. You know, man, you need to just do a record where you're not singing and just get back to playing like the real old days of George Benson, you know. And from time to time, he says that he wants to get back into playing. But I keep hearing these records where he's singing. And that's okay, too, you know, because he really likes a lot of the pop stuff. And I know he likes to sing.
Mm-hmm. Well, two of the other names that I mentioned in the introduction that you've had some form of connection to over the years, Rick James and Robert Palmer. I wonder if there's anything you could share with us about those guys.
Wow, Robert Palmer. Well, Robert Palmer, when I met him and started working with him, I didn't really work with him a real long time. When I met him, he was actually he just finished doing a record, and the rhythm section was a band called Little Feet.
Lowell
George, yeah.
Sure. Dixie
and
Chicken.
And that was the direction that Robert Palmer first was going, and he was heading in that direction to do like a. I guess I don't know how you would describe that. Like, he really loved a lot of early R&B kind of stuff, you know, country R&B and soul stuff, because he also had. Used to be a band based out of New York called Stuff, which was like some New York studio musicians, and those guys ended up playing with Joe Cocker for a while and with Paul Simon he really loved a lot of rhythm and blues and soul music, and so his stuff was rooted in that direction. And so we did some things together, and that was the direction he was into. And then I guess he really wasn't happy with the sales, or the label wasn't happy with the sales, and so they just put him in a Giamatti suit, and he started going a whole different direction, which was great for him, I guess, you know, because he just took off after that. But he wasn't really he wasn't really selling a lot, I don't think, when he first started out. He had been dabbling in different types of music for a while, but I know that's where his heart was heavily rooted when he first broke on the scene. That was like 77, 78, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I remember Man Smart, Woman Smarter, and I'm really digging back into my brain for this. I was in college radio in 78,
wow.
79, and uh-huh. Playing him a bit, and then saw him, I want to say it was 5 or 6 years later, during the Power Station days. And,
yeah.
He was obviously playing the hits from that time, but
yeah.
He'd slip in some of that older stuff, and you could see there was definitely two different types of musician at work there.
Mm-hmm.
Singer, I
mm-hmm.
guess. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And what about Rick?
Now, Rick, it was through Rick James that I was able to get the song on the George Benson album, believe it or not. Rick James, we didn't actually work together. Rick James had wanted me to, he wanted to add, most of the guys in his band were from up in Buffalo, and he wanted to add a second guitar player to his band, and I had known the sax player. He and I were friends off and on for a while, and Danny, the sax player, had asked me if I'd be interested in doing some things with Rick James, and I said, sure, I'd love to do it. So he said, okay, well, Rick's going to be in New York for a couple of days, and it'd be great if you came down to the hotel and hung out and, saw what the scene was about. And I went and met with Rick, and it was like a real crazy scene, and it was like, well, I don't know, if I could really survive this kind of thing so much. And he was a sweetheart because the other guitar player felt like maybe his job was in jeopardy, and Rick was sort of like indebted to those guys, because he had known them for such a long time. He, Rick James had known what the business was about, and that was dog eat dog, and so he had a certain sort of camaraderie, with the guys in his band. And as it turned out, he said, okay, if you're feeling that uncomfortable with it, I won't really add a second guitarist, and I kind of like felt relieved in a sense, because it's like a lot at that time. That was like the height of his career, and he was like selling out stadiums, and at that time I don't think I would have turned the job down, but I was thinking, man, would I have survived like 1 week of that kind of touring, that kind of partying that they got. But anyway, he was in town to record at Atlantic Recording Studios, and he told me he was doing he was working on a record with the singer Chaka Khan.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And I at that time I had known that Chaka Khan was being produced by a producer by the name of Arif Martin. And I've always admired a lot of Arif Martin's production. So when I found that Rick James was going to be doing this session with at Atlantic Studios, I had asked if I could come along, and he said, yes, sure, come on. I met with Arif and picked his brain a little bit, and he told me all these great stories, and I said, well, what's next on the plate for you? And he said, I'm getting ready to produce George Benson's new record. And then I said, wow, that's great, So I had asked him if I could come down like a week later to attend some of the sessions, because I told Larry that I'd known George for a while. He said, sure, come on down. And while George and Arif were in town, while George was in town recording also, I had gone back to Atlantic Studios, and the three of us were talking, George, Arif, and myself, and they discovered that I was writing these songs, and so they had asked me for a track, and one thing led to the next. But that was my meeting of Arif Martin through Rick James, and so it's almost like being at the right place at the right time, so to speak, because I never really, I wanted to work with Rick James, but I didn't want to work with just Rick James, what I mean?
Yeah, I think anyone who knows anything about Rick James could completely understand that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You would either make a commitment to that lifestyle or you wouldn't. You just
right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
You know? I don't see there being a halfway point there. You're either all in or you're, you know, on the sideline.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think what I'm going to do, because we're already past time here, is I'm going to end the show in a minute, and we'll go out playing Somebody, another great song off of Adam Falcon's Bohemian 959 album. Will you be touring this in the coming months? Will people be able to see you playing anywhere?
Well, actually, yeah, not too much in New York. There's like a few spot dates that we're working on, some things down in Nashville and maybe down in Florida. But in the early fall, we're putting together like a tour of Spain and France.
Wow.
But at the moment, I don't really have too many things set up right now. I'm doing something on the 24th, which I'm really excited about. At the Rivertown, there's a Rivertown film screening here I live in Rockland County, up in Nyack, New York. The Rivertown film screening of Bill Withers' documentary called Still Bill.
Hmm.
So I'll be actually performing somewhere, I think that's on the April 24th at the Nyack Center. So I'll be doing a performance there. After the showing of the documentary, but there's nothing really here that we have set up per se, but you could always check my website, which is adamfalcon.com, and there's some dates that we'll be posting from time to time.
I was just going to make that plug. You saved me that, so I will do this. Let me tell people they can find you on Facebook at facebook.com/AdamFalcon3rd, as in the number 3 and then RD, Adam Falcon 3rd. You can also follow Adam Falcon on Twitter, twitter.com/Adam_Falcon. But I'm sure if you just put in search engine into the search slot on Twitter, Adam Falcon, you'll find him. Adam, as I said to start the show, I really enjoyed being introduced to your work, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you. And I almost forgot, folks, listen, this is the most important part, right? You can order Adam's new album, Bohemian 959, on iTunes, on Amazon.com, or MrMedia.com, where many of you will probably hear this very interview in the future. So order it up now, Bohemian 959 by Adam Falcon, iTunes, Amazon, Mr. Media, probably quite a few other places. And Adam, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I had a great time.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon, and take care.
Okay, you too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And folks, for more interviews with your favorite musicians, you can surf over to our main website. That is, of course, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Gene Simmons of KISS, the late John Denver, and many, many more. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media radio listeners. You can go to www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia, that's Mr. Media, to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, that's www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia for your free audiobook. And, of course, subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. I know you're dubious, but try it. It does work. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. And you can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody, and this is Adam Falcon, Somebody.
Now just a little